I'm Christina Orlova, your host on the OCD Whisperer podcast, your trusted companion in the battle against OCD. If you're like me and understand the struggles of living with OCD, then you're in the right place. But before we dive into today's episode, I want to tell you about something incredible. Get your OCD survival kit today at www.onlineocdacademy.com. It's filled with amazing resources to aid you in all things OCD, whether you're on a tight budget or just looking to supercharge your progress. Now, enjoy the show. Welcome to OCD Whisperer Show. Today with me, I have Ben Eckstein, and he's the owner and director of Bull City Anxiety and OCD Treatment Center in Durham, North Carolina. He is vice president of OCD North Carolina, the state affiliate of the International OCD Foundation. In addition to his clinical work, Ben is a speaker, trainer, and author of Worrying is Optional: Break the Cycle of Anxiety and Rumination That Keeps You Stuck. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love when I actually have folks who, you know, are part of the affiliate chapters of IOCDF. I think it's just so awesome to, you know, not just have like the annual OCD meetings, but like have local things around, you know, the country.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's really important stuff. Yeah. We moved down to North Carolina about 10 years ago. And before that, we were in Boston. And, you know, IOCDF is headquartered in Boston. And so there's tons of stuff going on. They're really active. And when I moved down to North Carolina, I was like, oh yeah, I got to get connected with the folks there. And I kind of lucked out in that they were already in the process of starting up OCD North Carolina. And so I was fortunate to kind of hop on board and get involved. And they had already done some of the heavy lifting. So I'm really happy to be involved.
I love it. Well, you and I connected and we talked a little bit about, you know, today talking about identifying ERP pitfalls. And I definitely think this is an important topic, right? A lot of folks with OCD, I mean, I think it's important to know that anyone, you know, when we're thinking about treatment or doing work, it's not an easy feat, right? And when you're talking about a fear-based process that you have to work with that's in your own mind that sometimes feels like is out of your control, right? I think there's so many nuances, which is really why, you know, I have this podcast dedicated just literally to OCD, because there's so many nuances in this diagnosis, a disorder. So, you know, when we're talking about ERP, I guess, let's get into this conversation. Like, how can you identify pitfalls? How can you do ERP well, right? How can you work with your mind when, you know, I think there's so many things in there, from white knuckling to being perfect to using treatment compulsively. I mean, much. So I'm gonna kind of let you jump on there.
Yeah, there's so much stuff there. And I, you know, always want to be mindful that I don't want anyone to come away from the podcast today feeling like, oh, I have to perfect my exposures. You know, we're not talking about perfecting it. But I do think it's important to make sure we're just doing it effectively. And I always kind of joke with people that this is how I sleep at night, right? Like, I need to be able to walk away from sessions with clients knowing I didn't torture them unnecessarily, right? Like that. I think if we're just doing exposure, and as you said, it's really hard, it can be really uncomfortable sometimes. And I need to know that we're actually getting something out of that. You know, I don't want people to just suffer for no reason. You know, that I want people to, yes, do these hard things, but to do it with purpose and to do it in a really effective way. So that we know, hey, if we did something hard today, we did it for a really good reason and we're going to get something out of it. So yeah, I think it's really important just to make sure that we are, you know, doing our due diligence to make sure that we're doing it in a way that actually is going to get the kind of results that we're looking for. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff we can dig into there.
Yeah, okay. So when you said that, right, like one of the things that comes to my mind immediately, just from treating, you know, hundreds of clients, as, you know, having OCD myself, the truth is, you know, I think the most common thought that comes to people's minds is that, you know, well, but it does feel sometimes like I have to tolerate and kind of push through something. But it does feel like, sure, maybe I have a good reason, like, okay, I want, I don't know, independence again, or I want to be in a loving relationship, right? But I commonly still hear people saying things like, yeah, but I still have to, you know, somehow, like, even though we're talking about how do you not white knuckle, but I do feel like I have to white knuckle. So I think it's important to kind of address that stuff, right? Because it's not just about like, let's find a different way of looking at it, but let's really address that, right? Because that is a common notion that people have, and they do have those beliefs and they do have those experiences.
Yeah. You know, I think the white knuckling idea of like, hey, if you go into exposure kind of over controlled, stealing yourself for it, right? Like just using this sort of brute force to push yourself through it, you know, that's bad. You know, we don't want to do that. I agree, right? Like, hey, I think ideally we are trying to go into exposure, getting really open to the experience, allowing it to be there, you know, really practicing acceptance of whatever thoughts or feelings are showing up in that moment. But I also think it's important, again, maybe this is where that kind of perfectionism idea shows up. We don't have to be perfect there. And of course we won't be, you know? And so I always think about acceptance in this way where it's a process, it's not an outcome, you know? So I can't just say, hey, I accept anxiety and now I have accepted anxiety forevermore and it's permanent and that's just how I'm going to be now, right? Like that's not how it works, you know, that it's a thing we do in the moment and we are going to catch ourselves white knuckling. We're going to catch ourselves resisting or struggling or doing whatever just kind of naturally shows up in that moment. And then we're going to kind of gently bring ourselves back to a place of openness and acceptance. And yeah, that kind of willingness that we want to channel in the moment. But I think it's sort of inevitable that we're going to kind of move back and forth between those things. And it's going to be this ongoing thing. So yeah, I think I would say to those people, like, yeah, you're right. Like, of course, you're going to find these moments where you're sort of white knuckling through it. And I think in those moments, we can still come back to trying to practice that kind of openness that we're trying to channel in that moment.
Well, you know, of course, I could hear people now, and how the heck do you do that? Yeah. Right? Because that's going to be the first question. Like, yeah. Sounds great in theory, but like, what do you mean, Ben?
Yeah, it's hard, right? And I think this is why we practice. And I'll say when I do exposure with people, this is one of the things that I'm always asking about. It's like, you know, I think sort of traditionally when we're doing ERP, a lot of therapists are asking about SUDS. So subjective units of distress, you know, how anxious are you in the moment? And I am much more inclined to be asking about willingness and openness. And so, you know, as you're doing this exposure, how open are you to that feeling? Can you get yourself more open? Can you roll your shoulders and kind of relax your body? Can you take a breath? Can you just make space for that feeling? And so I'm much more interested in like, can you teach yourself to kind of approach these feelings rather than resisting them? And I think at the end of the day, it's a skill that takes practice and you have to do it really intentionally. I don't think that comes naturally to any of us. As far as I know, I don't know. That certainly hasn't been my experience. You know, I think my natural inclination is to tighten up, to resist, to kind of, you know, grin and bear it and try to get through it. But I think it takes a lot of practice to really cultivate that willingness in the moment.
I mean, I agree, right? Because I think naturally just the way we're wired is if something feels really uncomfortable and unpleasant, we want to shut it down. We want to solve it, obviously, and then just have it go away. That's yeah. Just a very instinctual, like, natural place and makes yeah. sense, especially from the evolutionary standpoint. But what you're saying, and you know, anybody listening, of course, we know, like with OCD, I think it's understanding your own OCD brain and how it impacts and triggers your fight and flight response or fight, flight and freeze, yeah. right? And how then your perception gets very skewed and catastrophic and all this happens like in seconds,
yeah.
right? And so then how to slow that down. And that's what you were just saying. And so, you know, if somebody is thinking about, okay, if I'm going to approach this, what would you say? Like, how do you then... I think one of the things we talked about is like how you might do too much E or not enough RP, like meaning yeah. you may do exposures, but not enough response prevention. Like, let's talk about what does that really mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So that, I think that's probably my favorite of the pitfalls, just because I think it's, for me, it feels like the one that I see people stumbling on the most often. I would say, I think both for therapists and for individuals with OCD, you know, that I think when we talk about ERP, everyone just, we call it exposure. I'm guilty of doing it. I just say like, oh yeah, we got to do exposure. But I think at the end of the day, exposure doesn't really matter. You really need response prevention in order for this to be effective. You know, like, life is exposure. If people are getting exposure all the time, every day, if just exposure worked, then nobody would be struggling with this, right? Like, it's constant. So yeah, I think the lack of exposure is usually not the problem. It's the lack of response prevention. And I feel like I often see, again, both therapists and clients, I love this, but like trying to get really creative with exposures, like, oh, we got to find like the coolest thing we can do and like something really creative. And how do we tap into this fear in this really perfect way? And I always say like, well, like, do you know how to resist the compulsions? Right. Cause like, that's actually the thing that matters. And I see this coming up the most with mental compulsions. You know, so I think that's one of those things that, you know, it's not quite as straightforward as resisting a hand wash or resisting checking a lock, right? Like that it's not tangible in that same way. But I think it's a thing that people miss a lot. And so even something like contamination, for example, where, again, people focus on cleaning and hand washing and that kind of thing, the avoidance and all these really tangible things that people do. But people don't talk as much about, you know, how much are you tracking, you know, what has touched what, right? Like that mental process of just being hypervigilant and paying attention to everything. I think the kind of the mental review of what touched what, it, you know, I think they're even with contamination, which I think is something that people often think of as a really tangible compulsion. There are a lot of mental compulsions that come with that. And so I think if we're going in, I don't know, touching doorknobs or toilets or whatever the exposure is, and we're not also thinking about, well, like, what are you doing in your head while you're doing this? Then we've kind of missed it. And I think it's really easy to say, oh, you touched the doorknob and you didn't wash your hands. That's great. But if that whole time you're kind of planning out like, okay, well, I'm going to avoid touching this. And like, well, like, I'm not going to be able to come back to this bathroom again, right? Like right. That's not going to work, right? Like that we really have to tap into those mental compulsions. So I always, when doing ERP, I want to make sure that people know how to address mental compulsions. I want to make sure that they know not just what's the exposure, but what are the other things that I need to be doing or not doing in response to that exposure. So I think that's where it makes a difference is changing the response, not just the exposure part.
Totally. I mean, I love that. And I agree. I definitely see that a lot. And the mental processes in that compulsive figuring things out way. So I know the OCD, you know, niche well enough to say that anybody listening is going to be asking a question of, okay, that sounds great. How the heck do I do that? Right? Yeah. How do I, because it's not tangible, right? I can't just grab it. I can't just measure it externally. So what do I do? How do I not be hypervigilant? How do I, you know, when my brain wants to start to jump into catastrophic places or conclusions, or I'm starting to track or try to connect stuff, right? How do I interrupt that? How do I not do that?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. And I think it has a really complicated answer. And I think most people listening will probably already know the answer is not, well, just don't do it, right? Like, stop doing that, right? That won't work. But I think it's really complicated because I think that process of worrying, ruminating, all the sort of overanalysis and examination that we do, these are really complicated behaviors. And I think they're part habit, right? So for some people, this stuff just happens automatically. And I think for a lot of people, that kind of obscures the idea that you actually can control this, you know, that it may happen automatically, but that doesn't mean it's inevitable. And example I sometimes use is like, well, like I put on my right pant leg first out of habit. I don't think about it. That doesn't mean I can't put on my left pant leg first, right? Like I can do that. It's going to take a little more intentionality. I might have to make a reminder for myself. I might have to cultivate more awareness of that behavior, right? Like it's going to take some effort and energy. It'll have to be really intentional, but of course I can do it. I think a lot of people make this mistake that just because it's automatic or habitual, that means it's not in our control. And that's not true, right? We can control it. So I think for a lot of people, I think the first step is just building that awareness. And that could be making a log. I personally draw a lot from the sort of almost like body focused repetitive behavior kind of approach of like making a log and tracking, you know, hey, what's the situation? What are you thinking in the moment? What are you feeling in the moment? You know, I look a lot at those sort of permission giving statements of, oh, I'll just think about this for a little bit, or I need to think about this in order to solve the problem, or, you know, whatever it is that people are using to kind of rationalize that process. So yeah, I think we really have to build up that awareness of, hey, what is this behavior like for this individual? Why are they doing it? How is it showing up? What's the function? And then we need to sort of tailor our interventions accordingly. And I think for a lot of people, that means really getting good at becoming aware in the moment and then practicing some skill of shifting our attention to something else. And I think this is another one of those really nuanced things is we're not saying avoid or distract. We're saying, put your attention where you want it. You don't have to be at the mercy of these thoughts, but we want to make space for the thoughts, allow them, be aware of them, but direct our attention to what we're doing. I actually, it's funny, I feel like I'm repeating myself because I just recorded a talk for the OCD conference talking about a lot of the same stuff. But the example that I think about, it's like right now, I'm aware of all sorts of things, right? That I'm paying attention to the conversation we're having and trying to focus on the stuff that we're doing. But of course, I am simultaneously aware of the feeling I feel in my chair or a bunched up sock or what am I going to have for dinner tonight? Or, right, like there's a ton of stuff that just floats around in my head, in everyone's heads. And we just direct our attention to what we're doing. And I'm not blocking out thoughts about dinner. I can acknowledge, hey, I need to figure out what I'm going to have for dinner. Okay, great. I'll solve that problem later. I'm going to come back to what I'm doing now, right? That it's just directing our attention. So I know it's sort of a long-winded answer, but I think the reason it's long-winded is I think it's a really complicated issue. And I think this is why a lot of people skip over it and don't really address the mental compulsions and the rumination, because it's not as straightforward. And I think it is really so unique to each individual as to kind of what skills they need to build in order to manage this.
Yeah. So there's two things. One is, yeah, I think that, you know, what we're talking about here, it's the difference between understanding that the act of thinking is an act, that is not, yeah, just a thought. That's not just a thought that just kind of popped in there. It's like, no, this is an act I'm taking of where I'm actually consciously thinking about something. That's kind of the difference there. And the second thing that I wanted to say is one of the pitfalls, and I want to know what's your kind of perspective on this, is people might grasp that concept, say, okay, I get that. But what about, you know, when, let's say, you know, folks don't, they have a lot of downtime, or, right, they're sitting in there, because what you're talking about, I could see, okay, that's wonderful. If, let's say, somebody's in a place where, let's say, the impairment is not so much, where they're still able to somewhat, you know, do things, mm-hmm, in life, right? Whether it's, you, yeah, know, I'm going to work, or, you know, attending to family or my relationship or hobbies, etc. So, you know, that I think would work definitely well for folks who are a little higher functioning. But what about people who will say things like, well, maybe I do some of those things, but really, like, I find that I have downtime, or I find that I have times where I'm sitting and I'm bored, and then suddenly I can't, like, my brain just goes and I don't really have, like, what do I shift it to, right? And I know we can all, common sense, you know, say, well, let's discover some of the hobbies and things you can get into. But I find that, again, one of the pitfalls people have is some people just say things that, well, I don't know, like, I really don't have quite a thing that I'm into, right? So then what?
Yeah, I agree. And that's a thing that I hear a lot, is like, okay, yeah, that's all well and good when I'm, whatever, when I'm busy, when I'm at work, when I have things going on. But what about when I get in bed at night and I'm just, it's just me and my thoughts? And yeah, I think it's really challenging. And I my answer to that is, you know, this sort of coping skill, this response of saying, hey, let's shift our attention. Let's get back to the present moment where we're engaged in a task. That is one way of responding to worry, to anxiety, right? So it's saying, hey, I'm just going to re-engage in life and turn my focus to that. And that's awesome. I think that is a wonderful way to do it. But that's just one thing that we can do. And so for those folks who say, yeah, I can do this great throughout the day, and then in the evening, I really struggle, my takeaway is usually, okay, so like, we're kind of over-relying on that skill. It's a great skill. I think we should all use it. But I think we're saying, hey, this is the only response I have. In the moment when I'm stuck in worry, the only tool I'm using is essentially re-engage in life. And so I would say this for anyone, if we only have one tool, we're going to be, I don't know, sort of subject to some volatility there, right? Like, it'll work as long as it's working, and then it's all going to crumble as soon as it's not working. And so I think that just says to me, hey, we got to build out a bunch of different skills. I would say, I think in the evening, yeah, there's less going on. There's less to get engaged in. You're probably going to have to turn more towards really building out your response to this. And so maybe that is cultivating this kind of openness to the thoughts. Maybe it's practicing a response to the thoughts. So saying something, I'm just going to throw some stuff out there. You know, hey, I'm willing to be uncomfortable right now. I am willing to be uncertain about this. I'm going to choose not to solve this problem. Thank you, brain, for giving me that thought. I really appreciate it. I notice I'm having a thought, right? So there's lots of different things we can kind of throw at it. Really, we're just trying to practice not engaging with thoughts, you know? So it's inevitable that we're going to become aware of them. Our attention will get pulled towards whatever thought shows up. And then it's up to us to say, okay, now that my attention is here, do I want to engage with it? Do I want to try to solve this problem? Or do I want to disengage from it? I sometimes think about all of these sort of unknowns out there, you know, that I think people all say, like, oh, how do I not solve the problem? And I usually say, like, well, you don't solve tons of problems, right? Like, you're not solving millions of problems right now. Like, there are tons of them. You don't need answers to all of them, right? Like, all of the great mysteries of the world. Like, yeah, we don't know the answers. That's okay. Like, we can notice that idea of, I don't know, what's the meaning of life? Like, well, I don't know, damned if I know. I'm just going to keep going, right? Like, we can notice these things and choose not to engage with them. And so I think if you can do it with this content that doesn't make you really anxious, you can do it with content that does make you anxious. You just have to practice doing it. And I think this is a place I often come back to is, yeah, you're not just going to say, okay, yeah, great, I'll do that now, right? Like, it's a thing you have to practice. And I think that's practicing flexible attention. You know, I think that can be doing mindfulness exercises and really getting good at kind of having agency over where you put your focus and attention. I think it can be using some of those kind of coping statements, coping scripts, you know, ways of kind of disengaging in the moment. So I think there's a lot of stuff we can do. But I think the key for me is we can't over rely on any one thing. You know, as I said, it's a complicated problem. And I think anyone who's going to learn how to manage this is probably going to have to wield a few different tools in order to do it.
Yeah. And really also what I'm hearing, though, is a decision, right? It's that I'm deciding that I'm going to work on this. This is important for me and I'm going to do this, right? And part of working on anything, just like we use fitness a lot as example, right? Like, you don't go into the gym once and go, woohoo, I'm buff now.
Yeah.
Like, right. You got to go and you actually have to do it over time and practice consistently over time. And then suddenly you're like, oh, look at that. Right. Something's happening. There's a change, right? Like, my body's changing and shifting. So it's not like a one-time event. And it is that decision to say, I'm going to commit to this kind of part, if you will, of my, you know, healing journey, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that intentionality is so important. And I think it's a good, you know, thinking about kind of doing, you know, that kind of log or, you know, just kind of paying attention to the places where you might struggle. So if it is the evening, if it's getting into bed, you know, if you've noticed there's a trend there, I think that's a really helpful piece of information, because then you can really try to channel that intentionality. So, like, something that I do for myself. So I know I have a bunch of young kids. And so when I get home from work, you know, I have this little window of time with them, but I'm also like, I'm tired. It's the end of my day, right? Like, I'm probably not at my best, unfortunately, like, in this little chunk of time that I get to spend with my kids during the day. And so I try, when I pull into the driveway, to just take a moment just to remind myself of, hey, like, what am I trying to do here, right? Like, I am going, you know, what I want to do, like, not like big picture want, but like in the moment, what would feel good is like, I want to put on sweatpants. I want my kids to like put themselves to bed. And like, I just want to relax, right? Like, that's what I like feel like doing. But what I really want is to spend like quality time with my kids. So I pull in the driveway and I try to remind myself, like, hey, be patient, be kind. Listen to them, talk to them, take your time with them. If they want an extra song at bedtime, it's not going to make or break anything, right? Like, you know, I think just that little pep talk of, hey, this is your intention going into this. And I know that doesn't make me not tired. It doesn't make me not want to be wearing sweatpants, right? Like, it doesn't change any of that stuff. But I know just having that clarity, that intention, I know helps me a ton. You know, so in those moments where, whatever, my kids aren't listening, they won't brush their teeth, they won't do whatever they're supposed to be doing, right? Like, just already having a plan going into it, I think helps tremendously to just get me into that headspace where I'm kind of, I'm more able to kind of stick to what I'm trying to do. I think with worry, I think we could say a similar thing, you know? So if you know the evening is where you struggle, I think it's really important to get intentional about it, to say like, all right, whether it's you're getting home from work or that's just, you know, you have a lot of downtime and for it's the weekend or whatever, you know, I think just to say like, all right, like, let's make a plan for this. How do I want to show up in these moments? I think if my success as a parent depended on my children behaving perfectly or doing all the right things, right? Like, I would be in trouble. And I would say the same thing for the worriers. Like, hey, if your well-being depends on your brain getting really quiet or you never feeling anxiety at all, right? Like, you're in trouble. So yeah, I think we have to go into it saying, hey, there's going to be some challenges here. I'm going to want to solve these problems. I'm going to want to turn inward to these thoughts. And I need to get intentional about saying, hey, for this period of time, my goal is to get present, to be focused on the external, to not delve into solving these problems. I also know, like, in line with that, that level of intentionality, we can't do for every waking hour. We don't have the mental capacity to do that. And so that's not that I'm giving myself permission to be a terrible parent the rest of the time, but I'm just saying, like, hey, like, I, for this sort of distinct concerted period of time, I can really channel that energy into a specific place. And then we can build off of that. But I think that's especially true with something like worrying. Like, you can't bring that level of intentionality to every single moment of your day. But I think if you can pick out, hey, this is an hour where I really struggle, I'm going to try really hard for this hour. And if an hour is too much, go for 20 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 seconds. I don't care, right? Like, break it down as much as you need to, but find these places where you can be successful, where you can get really intentional, and you can build from there.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the idea of different skills and recognizing that if you only have this one skill that you keep relying on in anything, like, that's actually not great, that you want to look at that. And like, I always tell my, you know, anybody I work with, same thing, like, at least when you're in the heat of things and everything's really kind of activated, it's going to be hard to think of complex strategies because we won't have that mental capacity. So, and we also won't remember a lot of strategies. So really, we do best if we can at least have like three to five somewhere in there, right? But something that, you know, you can easily, quickly access, grab it, and go right into it and start using it. And I love the ideas you gave, right? Like, come up with a coping script or a response prevention script, or, you know, like you said, maybe part of, if it's like, let's say if it's bedtime and it's, you know, a little harder, then I don't know, create a different little routine for yourself for more like that self-soothing and calming. But think of, like, again, couple of things that you know you could do so that you're having different things to work with. And then, of course, from what you're saying, sounds like too, like, revisit it and kind of relook at your plan and adjust it, maybe add something else. Like, we know variability is important for our brain health and growth. So, you know, if we're using coping skills, we don't want to be, I think one of the things we talked about before this is, you know, misusing coping skills, right? We don't want to also compulsively get stuck on something and saying, okay, I'll be fine because I'm going to, you know, latch onto this one thing. It's like, no, that's not what we want to do, right? We don't want to be rigid. The point is to practice flexibility.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's spot on. Yeah. And I think that is, it's true for anyone. I think that's especially true when we're talking about OCD, right? Like, that there is just that sort of proclivity to get a little rigid, to be kind of all or nothing, to get stuck in, oh, this works, let's keep doing it. And yeah, I think that is where those coping skills can kind of go wrong. It's just when they get rigid enough that they start becoming compulsive, you know? So it's not, hey, here's a tool to help me get through this. It's, hey, I have to do this thing in order to feel okay. And then, yeah, that's not as adaptive anymore. It's not as helpful.
Yeah, totally. So I have a question for you that's totally left field and not about per se, but kind of relates to this. So especially when we're talking about relationship OCD, even though I believe this will be true for, you know, any and all, but
yeah.
The concept of attachment theory and relationship OCD. For example, if people are coming from a place of secure attachment, right? In general, just as attachment style, right? They're able to internally have that sense of safety and security in terms of, I trust the world, I'm trusting people, I trust if, like, my partner wasn't available right now, it's probably for a good reason. We'll figure it out, right? Like, we're not coming from that place of needing to control or be pressured, or I need to know everything because, you know, that's a way for me to get reassurance. We're able to have much more flexibility. If we're coming from any other attachment styles, right? Anxious, avoidant, disorganized, et cetera, all of those styles are very prone to, right? A lot of these kind of internal mechanisms where there can be chaos and conflict and perceiving relational threats, even when there are none. And that's just already just because that's the way those styles are. And now you bring in relationship OCD. It's like, oh boy, right? So I'm just curious. I know it's a big question, but
yeah,
you know, when we're thinking about bringing some of that attachment work in terms of that deeper inner kind of healing for our own selves and kind of our self-construct, right? What's your thought in general on that?
Yeah. You know, I think about, like, the attachment thing with OCD, you know, so I always think OCD is really lazy, right? Like, it's going to take the easiest path to, like, hey, like, where is this person vulnerable? Where can I hook them? Right? Like, that it's always looking for just the straightest path to, like, what's going to get you hooked? What's going to get you doing compulsions? So yeah, I think if this is already a place where there is some of that doubt, that insecurity, right? Like, yeah, I think that feels like an easy layup for OCD. I think for simplicity's sake, I think it's always nice when we can say, okay, like, here's OCD in this box. and here's all the other stuff in some other box. But I know that's not actually how people work, right? Like that these things are interrelated. I always want to make sure that we are being mindful of the places where, hey, OCD starts in whatever way it starts. It targets whatever it targets. But at some point, it's also this kind of self-perpetuating cycle, right? Like that we do need to address those things that are keeping it going, right? So I think anytime we're delving into other areas, I think we just want to make sure that we're sort of doing our due diligence and making sure that we are not still perpetuating that cycle. But I know, and I think this is a place where I think some of these adjuncts, whether it's self-compassion, values-based ERP, or just using ACT in general, or things like ICBT, right? Like I think there are a lot of these places where there's a real focus on trusting in yourself. And I think in a lot of ways, whether it is via ICBT or ACT or ERP, I think in a lot of ways, we are trying to get to a place where we are feeling more secure in ourselves. And I think there are a lot of different paths to getting there, you know, depending on what model fits for someone. I think it is important to integrate those other things, to make sure that we are treating a whole person and not just this sort of collection of symptoms. I also think, you know, I think especially with the relationship thing, you know, I think that idea of trust, I think is, it's huge, right? And I think there's this sort of nice overlap in saying, hey, you're going to learn to trust in yourself. And if we're talking about relationship OCD, like we're also trusting in other people and there's risk and vulnerability there. And that's really hard. And the example I sometimes give is like, I don't know if I was worried my wife was cheating on me, I could, I'm sure, whatever, do a bunch of super creepy things, right? Like I could check all of her texts or follow her around or hire a private investigator or something like that, right? Like I'm sure I could do all sorts of super creepy things. But that's not going to help me develop trust. Like that's not how trust works, right? Like trust comes by being vulnerable, by taking risks. And, you know, that doesn't mean, I don't know, be reckless or ignore obvious red flags, or that's not what we're saying. But we're saying, hey, if you want to trust in other people, you have to give them a chance to earn trust. And I think in that example with my wife, like, I also want to be thinking about, like, what kind of partner do I want to be? How do I want to show up there? So yeah, I think sometimes trusting in ourselves, trusting in other people, it's hard and painful. And there's a lot of vulnerability there. But I think there's not real, I don't know of another good way to build trust either in ourselves or in other people without taking some of those risks.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Thank you for that. I know that's like a big question, but yeah, just something that has actually been on my mind a little bit. And in general, just in terms of, yeah, like fostering and kind of how do you help people move towards that more secure attachment place, yeah, right? For themselves, whatever other attachment style they might have, but like, how can we look at, you know, how can you foster that and how can you move towards it? And, you know, everything requires work in life, nothing and nobody has it all easy and perfect, as much as we might sometimes think that's the case, but it's not. And so it's just like you were saying, to your point, right? Like learning what is your vulnerability, what's your Achilles heel, understanding that part of yourself and then tending to that with love and kindness and compassion, and, you know, making that decision again, right? Like, okay, I'm deciding I'm going to do this.
Yeah, for sure. I always think about ERP personally as in a sort of broader way where, like, yeah, I think it's, for me, is really just synonymous with sort of experiential learning, right? Like we're just saying, hey, what does this person need to learn? And how can we curate the kinds of experiences that will help them to learn that? And I think about that same idea with something like attachment, right? Like attachment is learning, right? Like this is saying like, hey, these are the sort of formative experiences that you've had. That experiential learning has shaped how you relate to other people. And one of the things that you will need to learn is like how to attach differently, right? Like how to cultivate different relationships with people, how to practice being differently in relationships with other people. It's more experiential learning. And I don't think too many people would say like, oh, like, how do you treat, I don't know, attachment issues? Like, oh, got to do ERP, right? Like, that's not the answer. But I do think that idea of saying like, hey, these are all just variations on experiential learning and, you know, cultivating the kinds of experiences that people need.
I love it. Well, Ben, thank you so much for coming on the show. And so anybody listening, how can they find you?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. I have a website, which is www.bullcityanxiety.com. I am on Instagram. And what is my handle? I think it's at bullcityanxiety. And yeah, those are probably the two best places to find me. Yeah, Instagram, amazing. Website. Awesome. Yeah, there's updates on both of them.
Cool. And you have your book. So yeah. Let's make sure we also mention that, right? So if anybody wants to get that book, I'm sure it's on Amazon. Worrying is Optional, Break the Cycle of Anxiety and Rumination That Keeps You Stuck is the title. Of course, it'll be in the show notes. Awesome. Thank you so much, Ben.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us on the OCD Whisperer podcast. Remember, your path to freedom from OCD, it's a journey. Visit www.onlineocdacademy.com for self-help masterclasses that fit your journey, your pace, and your budget. We understand that not everybody can afford a specialist, and that's why we're here to provide accessible resources. Subscribe, rate, and share. And together, we can overcome the challenges of OCD. Stay strong, and we'll catch you on the next episode.